Hello, folks. This is Michael Miller here, the American Lineage himself, and I'd like to introduce you to a new podcast show I'm doing here. It's called Famous Kin in My Family. One of my hobbies has been genealogy, of course, you know, study of family history and, you know, doing family trees and all that stuff. And in this podcast series, I am going to be looking back at some of my ancestors or other relatives who either made an impact in their local area or the United States, the world. So some might be well known to you guys, and some are just, you know, locally well known. And well, I hope you enjoyed the series. And let's get started. Alright, this is episode 1 of Famous Kin in My Family Tree, and today we're looking at a newspaper article, kind of a special start here, the podcast show here, and it's from the Valley Voice, which is a newspaper, or was a newspaper in Middlebury, Vermont. It was from Wednesday, December 18th, 1974, and it's called A Visit with Donna and Harry Barrels. And you wonder who Donna and Harry Barrels are? They are my great-great-grandparents on my mother's side of the family. They basically lived in Ferrisburg, Vermont all their lives. So that's in Addison County. So it's around where Millenbury is. If anybody's going to or been to Millenbury, like the university there and all that. And just south of Burlington, folks, if you wonder where it is in Vermont. I'd like to give a special thanks to my... Well, I would be her second cousin once removed, Heather Simons. We're originally posting the article in on her Ancestry page. I think, again, Cousin Heather for posting this. I'll give a little background here. My great-great-grandfather, Harry Joseph Barrels, was actually born Harry McLaughlin. He was born in February of 1887 in Virgins, Vermont, and he died just a month shy of his 90th birthday, about 2 years after this article. In January 1977 in Ferrisburg, Vermont. When he was 2 years old, he was adopted by the Barrels family, so hence his name became Barrels. He married in October of 1907 in New Haven, Vermont, to my great-great-grandmother, Donna Selina Sears. He was born in August of 1889 in Ferrisburg, Vermont, and she died in November of 1987 in Millbury, Vermont, at the age of 98 years old. I never got a chance to meet Donna, unfortunately. I was 8 years old when she passed away. Wasn't even aware she was alive. Unfortunately, that happens to families a lot. Families spread out, lose contact, or, you know, they get estranged from each other for whatever reason, you know, for jealousy or whatever BS reason. But, yeah, so pretty much, we're going to get right into the newspaper article here. As I said before, my great-great-grandparents were basically farmers in Addison County, Vermont, and they lived on their farm in Ferrisburg, Vermont. I believe they had at least, if I remember right, 8 children, including my great-grandfather, William Harry Barrels, or Bill, he was known in the family. 7 sons and 1 daughter, I believe. And all right, well, let's get right into this newspaper article. I hope you guys enjoy this interview with my great-great-grandparents. And, well, let's jump right into it right now. All right, guys, let's get this interview started here. I should mention in this article, there's 2 pictures. There's a picture of Harry when he was 15 years old, and there's one that was taken for the article in 1974, you know. All right, so obviously the article is called A Visit with Donna and Harry Barrels, and here's the prelude to the article. Much of the Valley's flavor and characters in its people, especially in older men and women who live in the area for most of their lives and who know its past well.
Donna and Harry Barrows have been married for 67 years and raised 8 children in the Valley. She'll be 86 in August, and his 88th birthday will be in February. Residents of Basin Harbor and later Ferrisburg, they share memories and homemade cookies with Lisa Williams on a wintry Thursday recently. Her questions are indicated by the voice. And then Harry goes and starts off the interview. My real father's name was McLaughlin. And of course, that's true. His father's name was Seymour McLaughlin, and his biological mother was named Helen Brown. Now, apparently, when I've done my research, and I found out that Helen Brown and her mother, Sarah, worked for the housekeeping under Seymour Hayes, who was the maternal grandfather of Seymour McLaughlin. So, obviously, pretty much Seymour hooked up with the help. And of all accounts, it doesn't look like Seymour and Helen were married. And... all right, Lisa Williams, the reporter, asked him, "And who are the Barrows? Just a family of Virginis?" "Oh, yes, they live in New Haven. They adopted me. You see, my father died right side of my grandmother's house in Virginis, and that's why they got acquainted like that." And I just mentioned that his adopted family, or adopted parents, were Joseph Barrows and Melinda Trudeau, or Minnie, she was known in the family. And all accounts, it looks like Harry had a wonderful life being raised by his adopted parents. Lisa Williams asked him, "What did your father die of?" "He was taken sick. He was taking pictures in Virginia. He was a photographer. He was 19 years old, weighed 240 pounds, a big man. He was taken sick, and they didn't know what the trouble with him was. All the once he just died. And after he died, the measles came out on him. He died July 10th, 1888. I was just a little year old." And then she asked, "Your only child?" Now, this was his response. "The only one. My mother married again, and she lived up in Bristol. I seen her once when I was about 50 years old. She was 68. And she died next year." That's not completely true. Helen did have 2 more husbands, and she did have more children. Now, Harry, being growing up in an adopted family and didn't have any siblings to grow up with, like a lot of adoptees, and I'm not, based on experience, because I never had that experience, but probably would agree with me that, you know, even if you find out you had a biological half-siblings, you still think yourself being an only child if you were the only one growing up in an adopted home. So, obviously, that's probably what Harry thought situation-wise. And then Lisa asks Donna, she was actually labeled under her nickname, Donny, "Are you from this area too, Mrs. Barrows?" "Well, yes and no. I lived a part of my life in Ballston Spa. It was kind of broken up in pieces, but my uncle owned a big restaurant there. I was divided between my aunt and uncle, my mother and father." Now, her mother and father were Oliver Sears and Martha Parent. And she said she was about 3 months in each place. And then Harry decides to open up a photo album. And he goes into it and says, "We got a lot of stuff in this old book. I don't know where there ain't fishing and everything else." And Donnie... "So we had 7 boys and 1 girl. We've been married 67 years. And Harry goes on saying, "We've got 39 grandchildren and 49 great-grandchildren. Now, unfortunately, they probably weren't aware that some great-grandchildren were adopted. So the number's probably less than what they thought it was. And at the time, there was a great-great-granddaughter, my second cousin Crystal, that was around. I don't think they were well aware of. And Emily Jeter, my second cousin, was actually born the day after this article came out. So they were great-great-grandparents at this point. And even back in the 1970s, that's pretty rare. I'm not sure if Harry or Donna ever knew about their great-great-grandchildren, being the fact, like I said before, families separate and kind of lose contact with each other, so... And Harry goes on saying, "How would it be if they all came at once? They were strewed over the world. Not much now, though." And then the reporter goes, "Here's a funny old tintype. Those were about the first pictures that come out. Look at that deer. We had as high as 11 deer up there at the camp in Ripton. One year we had 11, another time 10, and we had 4 or 5 different times. When did you shoot your first deer? I went deer hunting since 1896, but I didn't shoot one until 1909. I kept going. Just the same, though. Look here. Here's a picture of a bear. And Donnie's response, yes, that was right out here across from the road in about 72 or 73. We had bees. He knocked down the hives to get honey. He came back about 8 o'clock at night. Dad and Sammy went out. Sammy is my great-great-uncle Sam Barrows. In case anyone wants to know, she's talking about my great-grandfather's younger brother. One of his youngest brothers, anyway. Here he goes on. He knocked the hive all to pieces and went eating honey. I had my shotgun loaded with buckshot. I could see his back end sticking right out. And I shot him right in the rear end. He came right up in the air and came right for me. He came within from here to you from me. There was a big right... There was that big bear right there coming. Sam shot, didn't touch him with his rifle. And then he turned and went down the road. I turned around and gave him 4 more. His back end looked like just a sleeve. And then there's a comical fellow lives down to the harbor, and I see him 3 or 4 days after I shot the bear, and he said, Harry, stop to think of all the beehives in the state of Vermont. That damn fool bear gonna pick on yours. And then they mentioned about their house. That belonged to Donna's family. And she goes on. So, you know, this is my grandfather's place. He cleared the land. I don't know when it was. He was an old man when I was a little girl. He had, I think, 6 sons. He was from Canada, French descent. My grandfather built the house. We did a lot to it. But it was a comfortable house. We put windows in, put porches on, and in the garage. Here he goes on. All of a sudden, the house is hewed by hand. And Donna's the English pronunciation, sorry. It goes on saying they didn't have the help they have today. And Lisa Williams goes, no, except the children. Oh, the children worked then, and they stayed at home more. Now the boys stay, those boys stayed at home. My father left and went on to the farm in Moncton. He was taken sick, and the horses ran away with him with a spike-toothed harrow injuring his liver, but he lived for 7 years. Several years, excuse me. We were close then. Our family was close. We lived about 30 years down at Basin Harbor. When we left, our next to the youngest boy, too. He had 2 farms now. I'm glad my family has grown up now. I think. Why? The reporter asked. Because there's so much happening, much different from what we knew. Like what? Young people, of course, they're... Or the old style of thinking, I suppose. A lot of things surprise us. We're just sorry because it isn't the good days, I guess, to talk about. I'll tell you, we weren't rich on the farm, but we had our living on the farm, and we were close. And we all helped. Today's a few who would stay on the farm. It seems too bad that the farms are going out. What are people going to eat? And Harry goes on, what is all of them people going to do when automobile factories and everything lays them off? The Chrysler people haven't got the money to pay their compensation or anything. And sorry about the lit up, because there's some parts of it, it's like lettering's out of whack, but hopefully, problem that here. And of course, Harry finishes the conversation, I don't know, I don't like the looks of it. We got enough to eat. Donna says, I wish he could have seen our garden. Dad isn't supposed to be doing hard work, but you should have seen this garden. Oh, it was a picture. People would stop and look at it. Pretty near 3 acres of potatoes and squash and all that stuff. Gee, I like to work on it. I can't hardly wait to spring. And Donna talks about one of her boys went down cellar with his dad the other day. And he said, you know, it looks like a grocery store down here. And I have a freezer full of besides. I bake my own bread. I do my own washing in the summer. But in the winter, it's too cold. I think it's wonderful the way we can do. Because you see, I'm 85. And we love it here. We love it here, excuse me. And here he goes on. After I get my potatoes dug this fall and all sowed and everything, I took my tractor and chainsaw and go right in the woods. And all that wood out there is piled up. I cut all that and split it up. I got 3 or 4 years of kitchen wood there. 7 years of chunks. Lisa Williams asked him, Harry specifically, tell me some of your earliest memories. I can remember the old Fardo shops in Virginia's. That burnt when I was 5 years old on a Saturday night. That's right on the north side of Creek Hill where you come from the bridge. That was one great big woodworking establishment. At the time, too, they had a nail shop in Virginia's. That burnt when I was 8 years old. Oh, and they had lots of factories there near the falls. Used to make axe handles and curtain rolls and all that sort of stuff. They used to have a foundry, but I don't remember it was before my time. They used to have a tannery, 2 sawmills there when I was a kid. They're all gone now. I still go every year to the Beeman Academy Luminary Meeting. I was in the 1903 class. They didn't live up to the standards. They didn't have things just right. So they made them close that. It has been running for 160 years, and the state made them close it, and they went in with Bristol for high school, and went in debt $2 million. You know, maybe the state has got some men that knows what they're doing, but they do awful funny things sometimes. There was 46 that was in that school in 1899. I started school there. There's just 5 of us out of that 46. I can remember every one of them. One night I wrote them all down. I can remember dates, way back, everything. But it bothers me to remember names. But I can get along. The Beeman Academy had 14 district schools all over the town. Well, 17 years ago, they gave up in schools and put them together and built on each side. And then burn, and then they built a new one. You could graduate from high school there, but I didn't graduate because I quit before the last year. Why? I couldn't stay inside so much. Let me stay inside now, and I don't like it. I got to be outdoors. So, what'd you do after you left school? Oh, I went to work for my father on the farm, you know, and then I was 20 years old, and then Donnie was 18. We got married. Well, how did you meet? And then Donnie goes in. My father carried a farm just below. We lived there for a year and carried on the farm. Then he was taken worse and we moved away. But in the meantime, he was right next where he was, and me and Harry. We went down together for a year and a half. Sorry about that, folks. Again, I'm trying to read this as well as I can here. You know, it's the first episode, folks. Alright, nothing. Alright, and the report goes, was that a long time to go together for 2.5 years? Well, I was younger and my people wouldn't want me and get married before I was 18. I had one sister. She and I are having a good time, although we never met, we never went like people do today. She married a man. She never went with anyone else. It's different than they do today. Because girls nowadays have dates with other boys occasionally, but I never did. We had people come into the house and visit and have parties. Young people, but not like they do now. Of course, the clothes are different. I think the older people think more of that. They do anything else, especially in the summer. And Harry goes in, the worst thing that there is that anyone can do now when you get to be about 60 or 65 is stop. You take an old horse and that's work all its life hard. Put him in the barn, hitch him there, and feed him, and there's a... In a month's time, you can't back him out of the stall. That's just the way a lot of people... That's just the way with a lot of people. They give up because they can't get welfare or things like that. I can chop a cord of wood pretty near as quick as I could when I was 20 years old. Today, if I keep going... But if you let me sit around a day or two, it bothers me to start again. So I keep going. The welfare people came down here about 4 years ago. They came in here and wanted to know how old I was. And I told them. They said, you're entitled to welfare and help at your age. They wanted me to go down to Middlebury. So I went down and they said, well now, we'll give you some stamps. Stamps? Yes. And they gave me $60 worth of stamps for $12. Now, she says, you got to have some money for fuel. I said, money for fuel? Well, yes. It can cost you for oil, don't it? No, I says. I burn wood. Well, you got to hire somebody to help you cut it. That will cost you money. We can give you some money for that. I says, no, I cut my own wood. Well, you gonna have something to cook with, gas or something? I said, no, wood. W-O-O-D. And even though they wanted to give me some money to go with my Social Security, so we have a little more to spend. Well, I took the stamps and I kept them 2 months. I sent them back to Montpelier and I said, I don't want them things. Send them back. Oh, I got a wonderful letter from them. I told them to give them to somebody who needs it and needs it bad, worse than we did. I didn't take them. And then Lisa Williams, the reporter, goes, baking with a wood stove must be quite an art. And Donnie replies, I've always done it, dear. You should see the bread I bake. Harry doesn't like cake with frosting, so I make mostly cookies, and I make pies, too. See, I handled so much honey here in about 28 years, from 80 to 100 hives of bees, that I can't eat a piece of cake with frosting on. And the reporter, Williams, says, do you eat the honey as you went along? Well, I taste of it, you know. He used to eat a lot of it, but he got kind of tired of it. Next to last year, we had our bees. I had within 10 pounds of 4-ton half-comb honey I made out of here, about $2,900 for it. And I got stung and had to go to the doctor. And when he first came here, I helped a lot. But one time, I got stung right on the back of my neck. And after that, I could not even go near bees. And Harry goes on saying, we lost 57 hives of bees from where they put insecticide on alfalfa and trophoid. I got a letter from the government 4 years ago to fill out a paper. I suppose somebody notified. And continue on. Them. I don't know how they got a hold of it. So I filled out the paper and went down to Middlebury. He sent it for me. That was in January. Never heard a thing. 16th of July, I went out to my newspaper and there was a letter in the box. I looked at it and it was bee indemnity. I opened it up and there was a check for $1,160 for the pay of the bees. So I come in, and Donnie says, any letters today? And I said, yes, I got one. She said, what is it? I said, sit down. She said, sit down. What's the matter with you? I said, sit down before you fall down. I handed her a check. Well, I got that $1,100, and then I sold off the rest of the bees and got rid of them. So we got $2,700 for them. We paid $2,500 for the place and the bees 30 years ago. So I didn't lose much on it. But it's a good thing I ain't got them now with the sugar the way it is now. $1 a pound pretty near to feed them for the winter. I can do it now. You know, sugar's worth more than honey today. You said you used to go fishing under the falls of Virginia. What do you mean by under the falls? Where the water plunges down, you catch bass and pike and everything right up in there. Oh, it's wonderful fishing in there. I used to have an uncle. an old Civil War veteran. And when I was a kid, 10, 11 years old, he used to take me with him, show all me all these them places. He was a great old fisherman. Of course, I like him, you know. We used to have great times. What are we going to do when they put on 50, 60% of our electricity? You want to tell me? Okay, you want me to tell you something? The rich are getting richer, and the poor are getting poorer. The rich are going to get it, and the poor man's got to pay it. I don't like the way the government runs things. I may be a funny man, but I can't help it. They would affect these prices if they wanted to. They're in Washington, but you see they got money invested in all them senators and representatives. They want to get the profit, you know. Boy, here was kind of a man ahead of his time, you know, in some ways. You could make candles, and then you wouldn't have to turn on any lights. And Mike Donna responds, "We got oil lamps, dear." And then Harry goes, "My mother used to tell me how they used to make candles when she was a girl in New Haven Junction, back before they had kerosene lamps. They dipped them. They take them all in to make enough candles to last a year. When we sold the farm to our next to youngest boy, he was 18 years old. We sold him that place, no money down, no interest to pay. And I said, 'Marvin, I want to give you a little advice. Don't go in debt for nothing.' He's followed that from that time to now. Do you remember the time before automobiles?" "Oh my gosh. I guess so. The first automobile I ever saw, I was down to New Haven Depot to Frank Wright's getting some grain or something for my father. I was a kid. I weren't very big, about 8 or 9. There was something coming. I heard a noise. It was 4 Frenchmen going to Montreal. They came from France on a boat to New York. They had 1-cylinder automobile with a canopy top and stick to steer it. And, you know, chugga chugga, they went straight up towards Montreal. That's the first car I ever saw." And then Donny mentions, "The horses were afraid of it. Let me tell you a funny story. We were coming home from Bristol when we were going together, and we were in a horse and buggy, and we saw 2 big lights come from a hill like an automobile. So he gets out and holds the horse by the head, and when that comes along, it was 2 horses on the hay wagon. He never got over that. It was funny. When I bought that 1910 Ford in the picture there, there were 4 cars in the town of New Haven. How many is there now? What are they going to do with all of them new cars they got? You see the pictures of them in the paper, haven't you? What are they going to do with them? Take a sledgehammer and smash them all and build them over again? 2 years ago, there were 2 young fellows that made a battery that would run forever and would never give out. They got quite a price for it from one of the companies that made batteries. And they threw it right to the one side. They'd rather make a battery run a year or two and then make another. I'm glad I was born in 1887 instead of now. Because what is coming? And if they start using that atomic bomb, thinks what it means, destroy the world. We used to take comfort in the old horse and buggy days, just the same. How many times have I hitched up my horse and my nice rig and give the old horse a couple of quarts of oats and go to a dance and dance to 12 and have a good supper? And they passed the hat around and put a quarter in. How far would you get with a quarter today? Oh, excuse me. Well, we have a, and this is Donnie's response, while we have a family of the best children, I can say this, I have never had a cross word with from any of them. When they came, sometimes they get together and roughhouse, you know, and they just, as soon as roughhouse with me as with anybody. We stayed young. We love it here. I think we're lucky that we can do what we want. And the reporter goes, "You must know all the people in this area. Most of the people our age are all dying off and new people coming in." Don responds to that question, "We have the bitter with the sweet. Our neighbors are quite on the young side, but they are wonderful, so we feel that we're fortunate." And Harry has the last response here. "I have to go every month, you know, for a checkup. I went down day before yesterday. He took my blood pressure and looked in my eyes all over. I don't know what he didn't do. Shook his head and like that, and he said, and then I said, 'What's the trouble, Doc?' And he says, 'Nothing. You're just the same as you have been for the last 5-6 years. And that is the end of the article. The visit with Donna Harry Barrows. Interview with my great-great-grandparents who lived in Ferrisburg, Vermont. And from pretty much the late 19th century into about 30, 40 years ago. Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed that interview. I'm sorry if, you know, some of it was like, because, again, the printout I'm reading, and some of the words were kind of like, you know, a little faded and all that. So, but hopefully you enjoyed that interview. That occurred in 1974 with my great-great-grandparents, Harry Barrows and Donna Barrows. Thank you for at least checking out this first episode of Famous Kid and My Family Tree. And I don't know what the next episode is going to be like. Who knows when it's going to be. Obviously, because I got to go through the lines here and see who's the next big ancestor I get to talk about on the show. So, obviously, yeah, this is my genealogy podcast show. And eventually, I'm going to get back doing pop culture stuff on my other channel, as you want to call it, here at Anchor. So, thank you guys for listening again. And, take care of each other, and I'll see you next time. Peace! And